as much fun as you'd have in here, you'd probably have some more with it. Well, good morning to you.
Welcome.
Yeah, it's good to be back. We had a great trip to Arkansas, spent about 2.5 weeks over there visiting family, going to the CMU workshop. Saw a lot of friends from all over the world that came in. We had a couple of missionaries from outside of the United States that are trying to plant campus ministries in other parts of the world come in. Some really exciting things are happening on that front. So had just a really good trip. It's good to be back with you, though. Did you guys miss me?
No. Yeah, we did.
Okay. Now, just so you know, we are referring to San Francisco as home now. And that has been kind of offensive to, you know, a couple of relatives, namely mom and dad, and, you know, maybe a couple down in Florida, who think we should still be calling that home. But when I say it's good to be home, that word home carries some weight with it. So we're really happy to be home. I can say that. Be serious about it. But today we're talking about taming the tongue, of course, moving through the book of James. It's kind of funny that I got tasked with this particular lesson. This isn't something that I necessarily have a handle on all the time. It's definitely something that I struggle with. And so I get to be the hypocrite this morning and stand up here and give you a lesson. It is something I'm working on myself. But you know, in thinking about this lesson, I was reminded of summer camp. Did any of you guys ever go to summer camp growing up? Raise your hands, huh? Let's see. Okay, we got a few of you. All right. Well, I was 10 years old the first time I went to summer camp. I went to Camp Wildwood. And when I was 10, we were still living in southwest Little Rock. Wildwood is north of Searcy a little way, so we took the trek about an hour and 15 minutes, hour and a half up to camp, dropped me off. Good times, right? I get to hang out with a bunch of other 10-year-olds in this little cabin out in the woods with some guys who had just gotten out of high school as our supervisors. We get to feed on snacks and candy the whole week, so I mean, really, it was pretty cool, all right? My second day at summer camp, there was a latecomer, this kid by the name of Edwin, okay? Edwin was a menace, not just because he was a preacher's kid, but because he was a menace, okay? Within the first 10 minutes of his arriving at camp, first 10 minutes of his parents actually getting out of there, I saw him beat up two kids. I mean, right away. Throughout the week, I saw him steal food out of other people's lockers in our cabin. He was in my cabin. I saw him be disrespectful, not only to the other kids and campers, but to the counselors. He would talk back to them. One day, he tried to drown me in the pool. Okay. One night, he snuck out of our cabin and went and hid in the woods. They did the final roll call to find out, you know, if everybody was in their cabin that night. Our counselors noticed Edwin was missing. Well, what do you think they did? They began looking for him, right? They couldn't find him. Pretty soon, the whole camp figured out that Edwin was missing, and so they sent search parties out for Edwin. People were looking all over the place for Edwin. Can you imagine a counselor thinking about having to call this kid's parents and saying, hey, your kid is missing? Can you imagine how much that was stressing them out? They eventually called the police. Well, the police, Searcy PD, eventually showed up. Edwin apparently saw the police car from the woods, and he decided to come out of his hiding spot. He had been watching all this stuff going on, right, the whole time. And so he came out and basically said, well, I was just playing around. You know, I was just playing hide and seek. No harm in that, right? Do you think the counselors thought they were talking that? Maybe a little bit, okay? The day after that, the really cool thing about summer camp for me was the idea of horseback riding. Did you guys ride horses when you went to summer camp? Okay. I had never ridden a horse before in my life. I'm a 10-year-old kid, never ridden a horse. We get to go ride horses. Well, Edwin's in my cabin, so guess who's in my group to go ride horses? Edwin, right? I'll never forget this guy named Jeff Tompkins. He was our counselor that was in charge of kind of the horses that day. And a red-haired guy, just remember him very well. He took my flashlight away from me for shining it in his face. He took us down to ride these horses, and he said, all right, kids, every single one of you get to pick your own horse, okay? So you had kids picking Cinnamon and Blueberry and whatever all the horses' names were. He said, all of you get to pick your own horse, except you, Edwin. I've got a horse that I want you to ride, okay? So all of the kids picked their horse except for Edwin, and we kind of thought that was weird at first until we actually started riding the horses. Then we kind of understood why Jeff put Edwin on the horse. Jeff put Edwin on a horse named Maynard. Okay? Now, Maynard, if he was standing in that stable, he looked like a tame horse, okay? If he had that bridle on, he looked like, well, maybe it wouldn't be too bad to ride. But once Maynard got out of that stable and had a rider on him, that horse wasn't quite tame enough. Edwin learned real quick, okay? That horse would just stop and not go. You know, we have a group of horses that are going down this trail. There's six of them on the line. Maynard's standing way back here 100 yards behind us because he's just standing there. Edwin's trying to get him to go, won't go. And finally, he does go, but guess what? He doesn't stay on the trail. He starts walking off through the brush and the briars, and Edwin with his shorts on is getting cut up by this brush and briars. You know, this horse is walking through, just a mean horse. When we got to the end of the thing, there was this big open field at the end of the trail. Guess what Maynard did? He took off running. I mean, he took off running, and he started running circles around this big, huge field with this kid on the back screaming bloody murder, man. He was not having a good time. Edwin was not having a good time. Now, by the end of that ride, Edwin had been frustrated because that horse stopped when it should have gone. He had been cut and hurt because that horse went off the trail and drug him through briars. And then he got really scared. That horse took off running. Okay? I tell you that story because that horse, Maynard, reminds me a lot of our tongues. That horse, Maynard, wasn't quite tame enough. In fact, it was untamed. It got away from Edwin just like our tongues get away from us sometimes. You understand? Wasn't quite tame enough. So if you've got your Bibles, go ahead and open up to James 3. We're going to look at a few different principles this morning. You know, the book of James says more, as far as New Testament books go, it says more about the tongue than just about any other book in the New Testament. Okay, it really says a lot about it. And the reason for that is pretty simple. James was writing to a group of people. Even though they were dispersed, he was writing to a group of people that really had trouble with the tongue. Okay, they weren't too different from you and I. I've got four main points from the text that I'm going to share with you, and then we're going to talk about a couple of points, just some practical advice at the end, and why this is such a big deal. Okay, so let's go ahead and read, starting out in James 3, verse 1. We'll read through the first part of 5. Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes a great boast. Okay, a couple of quick points about verses 1 and 2. James is not wanting to discourage those who are genuinely called to teach from doing so in verse 1. What he is doing, though, is he is warning them so that they'll know what they're getting themselves into. Teachers, spiritual teachers, how do we teach? What am I doing right now? Speaking, right? By nature of our role, we use our words a lot more than most people do. In addition to that, they are a lot more influential in churches. When a teacher says something and is expounding on a text from the Bible, that holds some influence, okay? James is warning people that they need to know what they're getting themselves into. Secondly, in verse 2, this basically teaches that controlling the tongue is something that everyone struggles with. Not just a select few people. This is really a universal problem. He says, if anyone is never at fault at what he says, he is a perfect man. So the tongue is so difficult to keep in check that a person who can handle it can really handle anything. If they can handle their speech and keeping their speech in line, then they can handle anything that they'll struggle with. Okay, that's basically what he's saying. Now, is anyone really perfect besides Jesus? No. So do you think the tongue is maybe something that everyone struggles with? Yeah, it is. If you struggle with your tongue and keeping your speech in line, you're not alone. Because it's something we all struggle with. Verses 3, 4, and 5, just like a bit in a horse's mouth or a rudder on a huge ship, the tongue has power that is greatly disproportionate to its size. Think about how big some of these aircraft carriers are that you see out in the ocean. They're controlled by such a very small rudder, okay? Think about the Clydesdale horse. You've seen those Budweiser commercials with those humongous horses with the little hair down around their hooves? Those things are big. You ever seen one of those? One of those things can be steered by just a little bit that's put in his mouth, okay? Now, I never thought about my tongue leading me around until I really started digging into this text. I always thought that verse 3, 4, and 5 here was really just talking about church leadership. Because of what he says in verse 1, talking about teachers. I thought this whole thing, like the rudder was the teacher and the bit was the teacher, and so this is all about church leadership. But I really think I was kind of missing it on that. Because in verse 5, that word likewise, he ties tongue back in with bit and rudder. And if you think about it, your tongue does lead you around. Have you ever thought about this before? How does your tongue lead you around? What does it say at the last part of this verse here? It makes great what? Makes great boasts. What are you naturally inclined to do if you boast about something in front of other people? Oh yeah, you can't get it right now. But do you think you might try to live up to your boast too? I can think of a bunch of times when I've said something out of turn about something I was going to do, or the type of person I was going to be, or, you know, anything you can boast about. And I said it in front of a bunch of people, and guess what I tried to do as a result? Tried to live up to it. Now, why is that dangerous? Because a lot of time when we boast, it's really kind of a self-centered thing. When we boast, a lot of times we're just building ourselves up, and really God is not in the picture. So when we're boasting and we're stating a goal that we want to accomplish, or we're stating something we want to do, a lot of times God has nothing to do with it, and as a result, our trying to live up to that causes our life to get off track. Okay? So this is our first point of four. Our speech shapes our direction. Okay? The book of James, speech shapes direction. It really does. And so we've got to be really careful about that. Let's keep reading here. By the way, he talks a lot more about boasting and plans in the latter part of 3 or 4. Do you remember? I think it's latter part of 4. And so this is that thing kind of continues in the book if you want to read it. Reading on, end of verse 5. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. So the tongue here has great destructive power. That's point number 2. The tongue has great destructive power. The tongue has the power to bring disaster. Okay, it has this power that's really disproportionate to its size. He compares it to a wildfire. Do we know anything about wildfires in California? Maybe a little bit, right? Seems like, what, every year? Some part of the state is totally burned up. How do those usually start? Huh? Small spark. A lot of times it's a cigarette, isn't it? What the firemen say. People driving along the road, flick a cigarette out the window, not thinking about it. What happens? Fire starts and it spreads, right? How big is the coal on the end of that cigarette? It's not very big. How big is that wildfire? It's huge. Thousands of acres burned. My dad was burning brush one time in Cabot, Arkansas on a hot summer day. You know what happened? Got out of control. You know how many acres got burned? 900. Do you know people still talk about that today? That's a lot of land. He went to the gas station shortly thereafter, and he heard a couple of old guys drinking coffee at the table talking about it. They say, you hear about that fire up the road? Burn 900 acres? The other guy said, yep, some idiot was burning trash. My dad was standing there buying some gas, smiling about it. These small fires have the power to get out of control really quick. Did any of you guys ever hear about Mr. Rogers? The true story about Mr. Rogers? You're in high high school. This was a big one in high school, right? You know, Mr. Rogers was actually a sniper in Vietnam. Have you heard that? He had 60 confirmed kills. You want to know why he wore those long sleeve vests all the time? To cover up all his military tattoos. Because he had a skull for every single kill on his arm. All up and down his arms, he had skulls, right? That's Mr. Rogers. Believe that? Dick, that's a total lie. Dick is up here saying that's true. It's true? Are you serious? He's lying. What about Bert and Ernie? Did you hear about Bert and Ernie? You hear about them? They're actually going to get married? Y'all didn't hear about this on Sesame Street? I can't believe y'all are out of the loop, man. Y'all are out of the loop. They're going to get married. They're having a big to-do. Sesame Street in support of gay marriage. You didn't know that. You didn't know that? That's a total lie. But people believe it's true. I could share a ton of stupid things that people believe out there. How did those rumors start? Started with a couple of people making comments. A little small spark that turned into a fire. Everybody believed. Now the examples I just gave you are kind of silly, right? Mr. Rogers is a Marine sniper, which Dick thinks is true. Bert and Ernie getting married, that's kind of silly, right? But did you know that rumors aren't always silly? Did you know that the little sparks that turn into a fire aren't always funny, necessarily? You know, those little comments like he's incompetent, or she doesn't really have her head on straight, or you know, she's kind of fat. Little comments can really turn into something really harmful. Okay? They really can. Proverbs says it this way, that a scoundrel plots evil, Proverbs 16, 27, 28, a scoundrel plots evil, and his speech is like what? It's like a scorching fire. A perverse man stirs up dissension, and gossip separates close friends. So fire, it spreads quickly, it consumes. And look back here at verse 6. It says that it corrupts the whole person and sets the whole course of his life on fire. Does that sound like maybe he's exaggerating a little bit? I mean, come on. Isn't he taking this overboard? Isn't this a little bit over the top? It's just a little gossip. It's just a little slander. It's just a little bit of arrogant boasting. Why is he making such a big deal about it? Does he think it's in the same category as other sins like murder or something like that? What is he thinking? Don't read that. There we go. Check this out. Romans 1, 29, 31. Paul talking about the wicked men of his generation. Here's what he says. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They are gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, and boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They are senseless, faithless, heartless, and ruthless. What do you know about them? What do you notice about that right there? What is included in the same category as murder? Gossip. Slander. Arrogant boasting. You're telling me that God puts those sins in the same category as murder? And all these other things? Is James exaggerating when he says it corrupts the whole person? Sets the whole person's life on fire? Is it over the top? Well, if you look at it from God's view, apparently not. God puts this in the same category as all these other things, murder included. Now, why is this? Because Dick said it a second ago, gossip and slander and misusing your tongue can destroy other people. It doesn't just hurt a little bit. It can actually destroy somebody. It's a serious thing. In addition to that, gossip and slander are divisive. Now, the ministry of Jesus is one of reconciliation. I talk about this a lot with you guys. The whole purpose of the church is to continue carrying out Jesus' ministry in the world. Reconcile just means to bring bring together. So Jesus came to earth to bring a fallen man together with a divine God. But did you know that ministry of reconciliation doesn't end there? Jesus also reconciles us to one another. Not only does he bring fallen man together with God, he also brings man together with man. He brings us all together. So when you gossip and slander, what are you doing? You're hindering a big part of the ministry of Jesus. Because gossip and slander is divisive, and it causes dissension. And look, it says it separates close friends. That's what your tongue can do. That's why God puts it in the same category as murder, these sins of gossip and slander. It actually hinders the ministry of Jesus that we're supposed to carry out. Living up to your own boasting can cause your life to go in a direction that God doesn't want it to go. Okay? That's why boasting is also in the same category, as you'll notice. So while it's easy to downplay the seriousness of an untamed tongue, it's easy to downplay gossip and slander and stuff like that. It's easy to downplay because I think it's easy to maybe fall into that sin. So everybody else is doing it, so we use everybody else as a standard and judge ourselves according to everyone else instead of maybe the absolute standard that God sets up for us. Easy to downplay that stuff, but is it serious to God? That's the question. Yes, it is. It is. So let's read on. The tongue can corrupt the whole person if you let it. This group of scriptures right here is talking about just how tough it is to tame the tongue. Let's read on. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea have been tamed and have been tamed by man, but no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison, okay? Our speech, point three, is uncontrollable without divine help. You see in verse 8 there it says no man can tame the tongue. Okay? No man can. They've tried it. We have exercised dominion over every single animal that's in existence, but no man can tame the tongue. No man can. What is self-control a part of? It's part of the fruit of the what? Fruit of the Spirit. So if we're going to exercise self-control over our tongues, where do you think that's going to come from? It's going to come from the Spirit, okay? The Bible says that we are to be controlled by the Spirit. We are to live our lives according to the Spirit. When we're talking about taming the tongue, we need to keep in mind that the only way we're going to do so is with supernatural help. And God offers us that when we begin to follow Jesus and accept His rule. Okay? The tongue is also restless, as it says in verse 8. It's always wanting to move. It's full of deadly poison. It is always ready to do damage. And we need divine help to get it under control. Derek, next time I'm going to bring one of them little squish balls. I'm a good shot. I'm just messing with you. I love you, brother. Verse 9, let's read on. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. What's he saying here? You ever talk to somebody who claims to be following Jesus, but then maybe their actions don't line up with what they claim to follow? I've been that person. You may think of somebody, and I may be the one that comes to mind. If you just don't say it out loud, yeah, tame your tongue. Basically, what he's saying is a pure heart and a wicked tongue are incompatible. Okay, they're just incompatible. In verse 11 and 12, he's saying, how can you claim to be one way, and then the way you talk reveals that you're something completely different? Real simple principle, okay? Jesus said that your speech reveals your heart. Okay, did you guys know that? That's point number four. Our speech reveals our true heart. Let's read what Jesus said about this. In Matthew 12, 34 and 35, he says, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Out of the overflow of the what? Heart. The mouth speaks. The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in him, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in him. Okay? What are we talking about when we're talking about an issue of the tongue? What are we really talking about if we get to the root of it? We're talking about the heart. Okay? This is way deeper than just what you audibly say with your mouth. We're talking about your heart. Okay? The words that come out of your mouth reveal not just who you are, they reveal whose you are. It's a big deal. The words that come out of your mouth reveal your heart, and why should we care? He goes on at 36, but I tell you that men will have to give account on the day of judgment for every careless word they have spoken. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. Does it sound like this is a big deal? Does it sound like James was exaggerating when he said your words can set the whole course of your life on fire, and that one day your tongue could be set on fire by hell? Sound like a big deal? It does to me. Notice that word careless. For every careless word they have spoken. We can't be careless with our speech. We've got to be careful. Okay? We have got to be careful. Jesus talks a little bit more about this a couple of chapters later, verse 15, 11. What goes into a man's mouth does not make him unclean, but what comes out of his mouth, that is what makes him unclean. And then in verse 18, but the things that come out of the mouth come from the heart, and these make a man unclean. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, and slander. Okay? When we're talking about the tongue, we're talking about the heart. Out of a bad heart, these bad things will come. Out of a clean heart, a pure heart, they will not. So if a person has a bad heart, what is the solution? Get a new one. That's what Jesus offers us when we come to Him. He gives us that new heart. So a couple of points of practical advice, and then we'll close out this morning. First of all, we've talked a lot about how destructive the tongue is, okay? We've talked a lot about it. Careless words, the damage they can do, they can destroy people. So what's one solution? Shut up. Talk less. Here's a few quotes for you. Flavel Yakley said, Wes, you've got two eyes and two ears and one mouth. You ought to look and listen a lot more than you speak. As I was talking to my neighbor in class one day. Abe Lincoln, it is better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. I like that one. Calvin Coolidge, I have never been hurt by anything I did not say. Neither have I. Mark Twain, a closed mouth gathers no foot. That's true, isn't it? I think some people born with a silver spoon in their mouth. I think some people are born with a silver foot in their mouth. I know some people that just do it all the time. And then finally, Proverbs 10:19, when words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise. Isn't that true? So talk less. But can you just go through life not saying anything? Can you? You got to use words sometime, right? And we've talked about the destructive power of the tongue. There's something else you need to understand. Proverbs 18:21a says, the tongue has the power of life and death. So yes, the tongue has the power of death in it. It also has the power of life in it. Okay? You can't go through life not saying anything. You're going to have to speak sometimes. Before you speak, think. Any of you guys seen this before? Have you seen this before? Have you? Oh, she does? The acronym? Oh, okay. Okay. Well, this is actually an acronym. This isn't original with me, but I like this a lot. It's really helped me. I want it to help you too, okay? Think. It's an acronym. The T is it true? Okay, before you open your mouth, ask yourself, is it true? Are your words honest? A lot of times, the juiciest gossip, like Mr. Rogers and Bert and Ernie, it's not, okay? It's not honest a lot of times. Secondly, the H is it helpful? Okay? Will your words help bring about a solution if you're dealing with the problem, or are they just simply going to add to it? Are you just complaining to complain? Are you really being helpful? Okay? The I, is it inappropriate, immoral, or idiotic? Ask yourself this question before you open your mouth, okay? Is it the right time to say this? If you're sitting in a funeral, it's probably not a good time to start telling jokes. Is it the right circumstance? Am I saying this in the right way? You know, a lot of times we can say something that needs to be said, but we say it in a way that's very harsh. Or we say it in front of a bunch of other people where it embarrasses someone. Okay, that's stupid. Don't do that. Is it a dirty joke, a cuss word, or something Jesus wouldn't say? Okay, don't do that. Don't do that. The end is it necessary? Does this really need to be said? Do I really have anything to add? Or does this sin really need to be confronted? Sometimes it isn't necessary to confront people. The scripture I have listed there, James 5:19-20 says, "My brothers, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring him back, remember this, whoever turns a sinner from the error of his way will save him from death and cover over a multitude of sins." Confronting someone can sometimes do what? Save them from? Save them from death. Okay? Save them from death. Sometimes things need to be said. Sometimes it is necessary. Okay? The last one, K, is it kind and considerate? Are your words genuinely based on a desire to help? Is what you say motivated by love? Or are you just being a jerk? Be kind with your words. So, quick review here. The points from the text: our speech shapes our direction, our speech has great destructive power, our speech is uncontrollable without divine help, and our speech reveals our true heart. So you ought to talk less and think before you speak, okay? Now, we said if a person has trouble taming their tongue, what do they really have trouble with? They have trouble with their heart. The way to cure that is to get a new heart. The way to cure that is through Jesus Christ. A lot of you out there thinking of people that you know that really struggle with this sin, that is very obvious, and you know what the cure is for them? Jesus. Maybe he put you in their life to share him with them. Maybe he did. And I would love to help you do that. And I know there's a bunch of other people here that would love to help you do that. People need Jesus. Every single sermon that we preach in here, guess where it's going to go back? It's going to go to Jesus. No matter what text we're preaching from, what section of the Bible we're in, guess where it's going to go? It's going to go to Jesus. I'm not exaggerating when I say that he is the answer to everything. He is the answer to all the hardest questions. He is the answer to all of life's problems. He is the answer to finding purpose and fulfillment in life. He is the answer to everything. The tongue is no exception, okay? We're going to sing a song here in just a second. Thank you guys for letting me put this together and share it with you. We're getting together tonight at 5 to sing. We're going to be in the library because they have a meeting in the fellowship hall. So come tonight for the library. If you need to respond, if you need prayer, if you need anything, go ahead and do it at this time. We're going to stand up and sing.